This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 All right. Welcome one. Welcome all to Rewind to SmackDown. Wade and I, we just got our sweat on by going through all of the news of the day, chatting about Carlos Silva inching towards a television deal. What could go wrong? Well, it's pretty much done. I should just announce it is pretty much where he's at right now. Also talking about Bound for Glory as Impact went down on Thursday with some highlights. The Gia Miller getting in here for one of the better interviews of TNA's year, I will say.
Trusted interviewer to know how to cut an interview.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. She can work the mic as a interviewer or interviewee. Wrestle Kingdom 20 tickets, and Wei and I theorizing who could be the opponent for Hiroshi Tanahashi, and could it be New Japan's public relations and events operations department employee, Wataru Inoue, as his ex-bio indicates.
You know what? Many should say he should put over a brand new star and the person to take the company to the next generation. So very possible. Yes.
Yes. Maybe him or Loki in a suit. And then we do our best to explain what is going on with the new method of television ratings data with the new buzz term for everyone. Big Data Plus Panel, which I can only hope is going to be a jobber tag team on a future edition of Collision.
I hope it's a brand new t-shirt that Brandon Thurston could put up on the Chop 2 store.
Yeah. Big Data Plus Thurston.
Can that be his new nickname? Brandon Big Data Thurston?
Yeah. No, I mean, no. It sounds like a team. It should be.
You could be Panel and he could be Big Data.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds Big
Just
Data cool.
The show.
Yeah. Also going through a quick preview of UFC 320 and the unfortunate passing of Arthur Jones, the older brother of John Jones and Chandler Jones, who was also an NFL player. He died on Friday at the very young age of 39. So our condolences to the Jones family. Coming up this weekend, do want to make mention, Wei Ting is going to be moonlighting on Collision Course with Kate from Montreal. They're going to be reviewing the show from Lakeland, Florida. We are going to have a UFC 320 show from Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannan coming out on Saturday morning. And then into next week, we will be getting around to watching The Smashing Machine and doing a review next week as Wei and I go to the movies to review Dwayne Johnson's latest release featuring the inspiration of the 2002 documentary, which we have put out for everybody for free. This is a documentary we reviewed last year, and it's now available for everybody on the free feed and here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel from early 2024.
Yeah, I listened to a bit of it today, and I never, ever, ever listened to some of our old stuff. But if I shall say so myself, I thought we did a pretty damn good job getting people, at least maybe previewing this topic for people that might be stepping into this biopic for Dwayne Johnson. That's getting a lot of at least Oscar buzz for him. So, whether or not you've seen the documentary, which is kind of hard to find these days, give a listen to our Rewind Away talking about the original documentary and get yourself set up for this movie.
Yeah, we're hoping to maintain a big surge of traffic by people searching for the documentary and then finding our review. That's thinking.
That's sort of the, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we should just put full documentary, ... review.
Leak. Should have put leak. In leak.
Well, everyone, we're going to move on over to SmackDown from Friday night at the Heritage Bank Center in Cincinnati. WrestleTix reports 7,246 tickets distributed. So this is interesting, and we should follow this because one of the great services that WrestleTix provides is not only the ticket count, but also they compare it to last time that they ran in the building. And for the last two times that WWE has run, we have a SmackDown from April of last year, several weeks after WrestleMania, where they drew 13,000 in the building. And then they did a Raw episode this past February and did 12,286. So, I mean, this is a market that WrestleTix even has noted, like in their history of monitoring how WWE has performed in this building. It's usually been in the 5,000 to 7,000 range until they've hit this big boom period. And you did numbers like 13,000 and 12,000 plus. And this one was 7,200, which on its face, it's like, it's a fine number, but I mean, it does show you like a softening compared to past TVs at this, this specific arena.
Yeah. Very interesting. Last week as well, when I did the show with
Yeah, Tima, this isn't just a one-off. Like, this is something that we have noted for a couple of these shows.
Yeah, last week they were at 9,800 in Orlando, Florida, which is down from 14,000 when they were in the same building a year ago. So we are certainly past the point of, you know, them claiming sellouts for all of these shows, and even maybe you could say more of a softening of those numbers than that.
Yeah, so something to monitor as we look and compare if this extends to other markets. Mm-hmm. Michael Cole is with Booker T once again, and Cody Rhodes opens the show immediately.
Did they say Barrett next week for Australia?
They said Barrett next week, and they said that, at one point they said Corey is recovering at home, to which Booker interrupted and said, he's done. He's done. And Cole said, no, he will be back. So Cody gets interrupted by Paul Heyman at ringside with Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker. And then we get a Randy Orton out of nowhere. He literally just emerged in this ring to stare down Heyman and the Vision. And Heyman actually came to speak to Orton, knowing if they showed up to confront Cody, that Randy would pop up, which I'm glad this worked out, because he probably had nothing prepared to say to Cody. What would he have done? Would have had to just improv this.
I'm sure he could have figured something out, yeah.
He would have had to do a roast, an impromptu one.
Oh, he's good at that, yeah.
He states that both, that Orton and Cody are going to lose tonight, and that's not a prediction, that's a spoiler, and he's trying to get into their head, explaining that...
Actually, he said that's not a prediction, that's a prophecy.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed it.
He's the Oracle, of course, John, so he doesn't give spoilers, he gives prophecies, yeah.
Basically, he explains that whoever takes the pinfall, it's going to sow mistrust in Randy Orton, where either Cody won't be there to help him, and he'll be asking, where were you, Cody? Or if Cody takes the fall, Randy will say, that's our champion. And I actually really like this, with the way that the match ended and how they did this to set this up, that... I thought this was like really well done, as this is like the slowest moving program between Cody and Randy that has been going on forever, but not even in a bad way, but it's just something that is always there, and you know they're going to get to at some point, and this kind of set up the tag match for later in the night.
I mean, it's been brewing in the background ever since Cody made his return to the WWE and, you know, made that ascent. Again, they have had a match, but it was a friendly, right? They were both on the same side. Right. They've not had the Orton heel turn yet in that time to lead to a heated match between the two, with Cody as the top babyface. So, I mean, tonight I felt like they were hitting this home pretty hard, to the point where I could see it maybe for a Survivor Series, you know, that feels like a big enough show for a match like that. So I think we're very close to a Randy Orton turn, and I think they've done a very good job of building up to it, with, you know, Heyman giving the prophecy, of course.
Yeah, more on this when we describe the match. Carmelo Hayes is approached by The Miz, and Hayes pretty much just dumps The Miz. He says last week he didn't save The Miz because he should have just kicked out, and he's done with The Miz, but I'm going to be nice about it. So Hayes moves on, and Sami Zayn is out for his U.S. title open challenge, and out comes Carmelo. He wants another shot because now The Miz isn't holding him back, and he's the best he's ever been. But before he can march to the ring, Miz comes from behind and takes out Carmelo with a skull-crushing finale. Now, I think this, too, probably gets co-billing at the Survivor Series, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
I think you start the build now.
I don't think it's making Survivor Series. I think it's an addition of SmackDown maybe 2 weeks from now. Yeah. probably.
So as Carmelo's corpse lays there on the ramp, Aleister Black wanders out. He took a wrong turn looking for his room, and he picks up the microphone. Wow, that is just so unfortunate. U.S. title open challenge? I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Smooth. So out comes Aleister Black and Sami Zayn, and Aleister Black would have their first match since an episode of SmackDown in 2019, which was a follow-up to their three singles matches in WXW.
Oh, is that right? Did yes. Cole reference that?
No, he said they've only met once. So unfortunately, in Michael Cole's worldwide data, WXW does not exist.
Cole's research or his team or his own research was really like he was working overtime here, I'm sure, on the iPad.
He pointed out this is Black's first title match on Raw or SmackDown ever.
Singles
title match on Raw or SmackDown, so excluding NXT.
Which is a really crazy stat to believe, but when you really think about it, it's really not that hard to believe, I guess. He's been in...
I mean, he was called up in like 2019, and then he was gone for several years.
So. Yeah, but even while he was here, I think he was in a tag team, was he not? Was he a former tag team champion? I mean, everybody's a former tag team champion.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, like has had nothing, so a bit surprising.
Black, let's get ahead here. They had a really great match here. I would argue this was one of Aleister Black's like best performances he has had the chance to have, because they got 15 minutes with multiple commercial breaks. Zayn hits an Arabian press to the floor and then catches Black with a Michinoku driver, and Black is kicking out, comes back with a bridging German. He's frustrated as Zayn kicks out, goes for the Black Mass, which Zayn ducks, and then tries for the Blue Thunderbomb. Black avoids, sweeps Zayn, and goes for the cradle, so they're getting into near falls. After the last break, Black sidesteps the Huluva and hits a Meteora for a big near fall. Crowd reacts to that, and then Damian Priest wanders to ringside, and Black just looks at him, is distracted, and is hit with the Huluva kick and a Blue Thunderbomb, as Zayn once again wins with the Blue Thunderbomb. 15 minutes, 21 seconds, in a very good match.
He's won all of them with the Blue Thunderbomb, with the exception of the Cena match, which was a no contest, of course. But like even in this case, with a distraction finish from Damian Priest, he still had to hit the Blue Thunderbomb. So I think like by this point, like one of the side missions obviously seems to be of this U.S. Open challenge to get the Blue Thunderbomb over. And by this point, like the people are reacting to even the attempts of it in a match like this one. So I would say they've been pretty successful with it so far. So a good match. You know, I like the Javon Evans match more, but it continues like a showcase of like really stellar matches that really has been kind of like filling the great match quota of SmackDown.
So if Robbie Eagles answers the challenge next week, I think that's going to up the percentage of Nakamura getting the call for January 4th, won't it?
That it would. I do not anticipate it to be him. Who else could it be for the Open Challenge next week? It's got to be somebody from Australia.
I don't see it being Grayson Waller.
Why not? That's entirely possible.
He's selling the Mexican Destroyer now. Like I think storyline wise, and
he'll be recovered by then.
The biggest one way, he's on Raw. How could you possibly do that?
Right. But as in like, I mean,
could Bronson do it, or is that just too?
Is he Australian or New Zealand? He's New Zealand.
Australian. Yeah.
He's New Zealand. I mean, not to say you can't do that. Yeah, I don't think you could do Reed.
Let's fact check here before we...
Reed's also busy.
No, sorry. He is Australian.
He is Australian.
Yeah, okay. My bad.
Yeah, nothing really coming to mind right now.
Okay. So Priest clears the desk and puts Black through with the Razor's Edge, and we get a follow-up there. They're going to have a match in Perth next Friday.
Yeah, it's one of these feuds that has been going on like for what feels like for forever. But it also just hasn't necessarily, I would say, evolved or like built. You know, it just like I feel like we're as excited about this as we were maybe the first time that they had a match, like in August. You know,
it feels like the blow off next week with the Last Man Standing, and maybe that'll be a foolish prediction, but kind of feels like they've run their course with this one.
Yeah, I would say that this year has been a real downturn for Damian Priest. You know, like he's been very inactive, at least as of late, not having too many matches, period, not having that much like notable screen time other than just like the occasional backstage interaction with an R-Truth or an Aleister Black, but really not doing a whole lot of note entirely this year compared to previous years on Raw.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe. Chelsea Green and Elba Fire met with Nick Aldis, who was in the midst of talking to Sol Ruka and Zaruka, and they offer Ruka and Zarya a chance to be Slagents, but they are not interested in being Slagents. They want to be tag team champions after Flair and Bliss told them to go earn it. So they suggest a match tonight, and Nick Aldis, looking at his booking sheet, has several blocks available, and they give them the tag match, which is next. Zarya lifts Elba off her feet, almost does like the Brody King choke, but instead of being on the apron, is standing on the turnbuckle. And then Sol Ruka applies the tarantula, which Booker T asks Michael Cole, what do you call that? And Michael Cole didn't have an answer for this.
It wasn't really so much a tarantula. It was a tarantula without the hooking the legs, you know, so like half a tarantula.
I mean, it was tarantula adjacent, okay? It was a Tula. Blind tag is made. The heels take control of Ruka. And then after Green hits a PK off the edge, they double team Ruka until Zarya is knocked down but returns, pulling Elba off the apron onto the floor. And Ruka blocks the Unprettier, sends Green into the corner, bounces out and into the Soul Snatcher and pins her in 3 minutes and 50 seconds. They had to cram all this in. So there you go. Soul Ruka and Zarya obviously leading up to a match with Flair and Bliss at a date to be determined. I'm glad they had to go through this exhaustive tag team division to get to this title match and have to prove it. My thought watching that last week was, prove it against who?
The division.
The answer was Chelsea Green and Elba Fire. That was our obstacle.
This makes them the number one contenders immediately. Yeah, I thought last week, you know, being a Orlando show, I thought like maybe the NXT showcase might have just been a 1 week only thing. This week, it seems like they're really carrying that momentum by having them feature continuously on these shows in Zaruka and also in Javon Evans. And I thought both of those acts got really prominent roles on the show and continued to make a really strong impression. You know, like this doesn't feel to me like it's a proper call-up. It feels like one of those sort of soft call-ups that they might give, that they kind of gave like Jakara Jackson in Last Legend, you know. They're incredibly beneficial for like exposure, just to kind of let people know who these two are so that they can return to NXT with a bit more value. And I thought they did well, you know, in ring, I thought they looked good. The backstage segment was not as cringeworthy as I think I've seen Zaruka in the past. It was totally fine. But in ring, that soul snatcher is going to be the thing that really kind of makes or breaks, you know, the success of like the appearance. And it looked great tonight.
Yeah. I mean, could you see them doing the tag title match with Charlotte and Bliss at like something like a Halloween Havoc at the end of the month rather than on SmackDown?
I'm thinking more SmackDown. Like, yeah. I think for their NXT takeover-ish type of matches, they're probably going to build on those shows. I think they're using SmackDown real estate to build to at least a main roster show somewhere.
Well, Kathy Kelly gets the reaction from Charlotte and Bliss, who thought that they looked impressive. And when their time comes, they better be ready. And I think at this point, this many months in, it's like they've had the belts for a significant period of time now by women's division standards. I don't know. I feel like this act needs to hit like a new gear. It just feels like it's the same, like, oh, we're not friends. Oh, some people want to be called queen. It's like, okay, this was like the novelty when you guys first got together, but it's like, it's been months now, and I just feel like you no longer have like the like it's a quirk with the audience. It just is sort of feeling like we have not found a new note for this act yet.
So I think this is not just a problem with this act, but really all throughout SmackDown. I think SmackDown has just a lot of like very poor writing, you know, and in comparison to at least like some of the mid-card acts on Raw. The mid-card on SmackDown, I think, has just been really bad as of late. Anyway, but like Charlotte and Alexa are an act that like caught fire with this audience for whatever reason. It's not necessarily because of the on-screen programming, because I think it's been awful from the beginning, but for whatever reason, you can maybe like suggest the Players Tribune article or just whatever Charlotte's been doing. The audience loves these two together. They were over, but they've done nothing to build on that momentum.
Like, they have no opponents to feud with. Like, there's no substantive program they've been involved with as champions, and it's just sort of we're left to these 60-second backstage. It's just we're riding the same wave we had in July, but it's like everyone's kind of moved on from this. Like, you want a little bit more substance at this point.
And with that sort of flatness, I mean, eventually it's going to cool off, you know. Thankfully, again, like, the audiences love these two. By the time that they're in the ring, they're going to be treated as big stars. And in ring is where I think they'll continue to really shine and get over. But these backstage interactions have made it kind of hard for you to really like them.
There was highlights of Roman Reigns' return on Raw, and he will be kicking off the show Monday in Dallas. Orton and Cody meet in the locker room. Each of them, they dismiss what Heyman had to say, and they're each going to have the other's back. The question.
Yeah.
Cody have his back at the end?
And Orton kind of acting this whole scene out with a bit more sort of like, you know, signaling that there's something else on his mind besides what he's actually saying.
Nick Aldis hosts the most dramatic contract signing I can recall between Tiffany Stratton and Stephanie Vaquer. First of all, Stratton was out in these giant like boots. She towered over Stephanie Vaquer. Just
I was going to say, I did not realize Stratton was that much taller, dude, but yes, I guess the boots.
Because Vaquer's is wearing like these like running shoes. So it's like she couldn't have been shorter here, and Stratton could not have been taller. It just looked like Vince McMahon interviewing Andre the Giant here.
Was a bad call. I mean, I'm sure I wonder how much they coordinate fashion, but like they're so detailed with their like staging and everything that I feel like this should have been something that they could have addressed before.
Yeah.
Because this made Vaquer look tiny.
Like, look at her. She's almost as tall as Nick Aldis here. Like, it's just, she looked so tall, especially when they went right next to each other. So Stephanie just says she couldn't wait to face Vaquer as soon as she signed here. We're two of the best, but I'm going to be the one that walks out. Vaquer had said she respects her, and she's going to show her that despite being champion for 2 weeks, that I'm going to be the one to win. So, I mean, they just shook hands, they signed the contract, and then they did a photo op with Nick Aldis. And Stratton goes to leave, and you think, like, this is going to be the most non-interesting contract signing ever, where literally nothing happened. But then Stratton gets jumped by Julia with Kiana James, and Kiana has a proposal to try and sign Vaquer, which it sounds like it was going to cost Vaquer. She would have to pay for Kiana's services. And could help her. Look what I've done to Julia, which if that was a heel line, very well done, but I don't think it was designed to have that effect here. Like, you could be Julia.
Yeah, no thanks. I'm good.
Like, okay. So, again, I don't know how Kiana was expecting to get around this Raw SmackDown divide here, which this would obviously create. I mean, Kiana, how could she manage from afar on Raw, right?
You're entirely right. Do we know that the managers are signed to the brands as well?
Well, I watch Keon every week on SmackDown, but I can't completely verify that. So I guess that does remain a mystery. So this whole time, Tiffany's got to sell like death on the floor from like getting hit from Julia by behind as this promo goes on. Vaquer's not interested, and Julia goes to attack, and Stephanie fights off Julia. Tries to go for the SVB, but Julia escapes and Stratton takes care of Kiana. So the two champions fight off Julia and Kiana, which sets up a tag match next week with Vaquer and Stratton together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know,
not often, a memorable contract signing.
Often these like champion versus champion matches, whenever we've had them, have posed challenges, you know, whether it be because like they were a lot stricter about their brand split at the time and you didn't really get those interactions between the two, or in this case, two babyface champions that just don't really have any sort of grudge with each other. Like, this is such a nothing feud that it's really hard to get interested beyond just, you know, the ability to see, like, possibly a very good match between the two. But they're also two relatively new people to the roster that, like, you know, Stratton is getting established, but she's still in the process of being established. And Bakir is a brand new face. So in terms of star power, it's very low. I would say in terms of promo ability, you're dealing with, including Kiana James and Julia, a pretty inexperienced crop here. So I felt like this entire segment felt like something that belonged on NXT rather than like in a title program on a main roster. But that's just kind of how they've, you know, stacked SmackDown right now. I mean, it's a lot of sort of new faces, people who aren't that great on the mic just yet. But, you know, it's also a case of like, hey, like, we need to give these people experience on the microphone because they really do need it. But this was a segment that I thought showed the inexperience.
Yeah, it was also noteworthy that we went from the backstage segment with Flair and Bliss to this, which was four championships between these two segments. And I think you can look at, just the status of like half these belts that are just like this women's US title belt, the tag titles, like,
yeah,
they have all these titles and it just feels like it becomes such a crutch. Like, that is literally the defining aspect of Julia's character, is she's the US champion and she's got nothing else that they have given, like, any kind of depth to this character. You don't know anything, nothing. There's nothing to attach to this woman at the moment beyond she's the US champion.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, on Raw, like, I'm so excited about, like, everything going on with Asuka, Io, Kairi, and Rhea, you know, and then Becky, and even, like, I would even say Lyra and Bayley. Like, all of that is way more interesting than what the women on SmackDown.
And no belts involved in any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Aldis met with Javon Evans earlier. They want to stay in touch because he has a bright future here on SmackDown. Phoenix enters, puts over his match with Sami Zayn, and suggests the two of them have a match when Los Garza see an opening here, and they come in and they joke, "Are you guys babysitting? Because you're so young."
How old is this guy? How old is Humberto?
Well, he's not 21. He is not Javon's age.
Oh, he's of the ripe old age of 29.
Oof.
Okay.
Old guy. Are you guys babysitting? And they pulled out the fact that we beat these two before. And I had to verify this. And this did happen in May. They did beat Ray Phoenix.
Javon Evans and Ray Phoenix?
Beat them on an episode of SmackDown in May in Tennessee. I have no memory of this, but it did in fact happen. And Los Garza remembered, and they wanted a rematch. And you know Nick Aldis. It's like, oh, guys, this is a live show. We're going live.
No,
in a few
hours. This did say earlier today.
Have a semblance of a show by this point? I mean, he also earlier today did not have that women's tag match. So, I mean, the guy just knows, I'm just going to get there at noon. The show will find me, vice versa.
Mm-hmm. It always does. Yeah. Yeah. Tag match here. But I mean, the bigger announcement is that, okay, Javon Evans at least seems to be staying for a few appearances. They are building towards some sort of match between Phoenix and Javon Evans. And I think they've done a really great job with Javon Evans, where, like, he's at the point now where every singles match he gets announced for feels like a dream match of some sort, you know, whether it be Leon Slater, or in this case Rey Fénix, or even the Sami Zayn match, you know, last week. I think they all feel like your must-see matches. So they've done a great job of just making this guy feel like the hottest commodity in wrestling right now.
There's a Jacob Batu video addressing his attack on Drew McIntyre last week, and he's tired of people lying, crying, and wasting time. Sounds like my thoughts about social media.
I wonder if he's on social media. Is he on social media?
How's his Twitter game? I'm sure he is, but I don't know.
Okay.
He's going to wake up anyone who's sleeping on him, and Drew is going straight into the fire. He's going straight to the top.
Yeah.
Simple message.
Mm-hmm. Not much substance to this promo, but very charismatic delivery. So, I mean, again, I feel like this program with Drew is a big test for Jacob Fatu as a babyface to, you know, like deliver. Can he match Drew on the mic, or at least even come close to Drew on the mic? We know he can cut, like, deliver great catchphrases. He sounds great as he's like screaming his head off, like walking to the ring. Is he capable of any sort of deeper storytelling? I'm curious to see that. I'm curious to see Drew's response. How does Drew pick at Jacob Fatu?
I think they're going to attack each other backstage for the next 4 months, and then they're going to have a last man standing match.
Yeah, very likely. Mm-hmm.
Los Garza against Javon and Rey Fénix. Cole promotes the showdown on Tuesday that Evans will be a part of. So we see Evans get catapulted into a forearm smash. Fénix comes in, hits his big tornillo over the top to the floor. Then it's Berto with a corkscrew to the floor. Evans with a tope over the top, and all four are down, setting up the commercial break. Los Garza takes control of Evans, makes the tag to Fénix, and then Garza is carrying both of them as Berto comes off with a disaster kick to Evans and Garza slamming Fénix down to the mat. Evans does this incredible dive over the corner and right into the camera operator and Garza at the same time. And we're watching it from the perspective of this camera guy who's probably thinking, I have met my demise at the dive of Javon Evans here.
It was preceded by another like ring apron, like very tight shot of him doing a whole sequence with Humberto, including like a cheeky Nando's kick and all that. Cut to the other side where Evans dives right into frame. So I have a feeling that all of this was planned, and I thought like a wonderful way of, again, making Evans feel special using, like, you know, involvement from the camera in a special way.
This is your new shot, okay, that Lee Fitting has scripted for you. You're gonna hit the cameraman every week.
I hope the cameraman has signed off on it, and I hope he has good insurance.
Yeah, it's the Chris Dispenza rule. Evans hits the OG cutter onto Garza as Fénix hits Berto with the Mexican muscle buster in 9 minutes and 10 seconds. Like the muscle buster, but Mexican. And they get the win here. And probably a singles match at some point, though I don't expect that next week in Australia.
Yeah. Main roster or NXT? I think this one might be a bit more, you know, flexible.
Like that. I bring up that Halloween Havoc show because they're going to Arizona, and they have not moved a whole lot of tickets for that show that I would maybe want like a little oomph for that event. And like they put all their promotion into this show on Tuesday, and then they've got like 3 weeks to really pump up Halloween Havoc. I would totally put a match like this. I feel this kind of means more on the NXT stage than this would be on SmackDown for a 1-2 segment match.
Agreed. In front of an audience that I think would treat it like a much bigger deal.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in Arizona.
Fénix.
Perfect.
Lovely.
Kathy Kelly catches up with Damian Priest. Be like, what's going on with you? He said for weeks he's been laid out by the Black Mass, and there are consequences to those actions. And then before he can continue, in wheels himself, it's Kit Wilson. And he says, you think power is intimidation, but it's just overcompensation. And Kit Wilson is going to overthrow the toxic aggression era. And then Dana White walked in. Whoa, what's toxic aggression? What's toxic aggression? Can you be too masculine? Not possible. And Kit is going to show him what true masculinity is as he stands up, and Priest proceeds to give him the finger poke of doom as he gets seated back in and is wheeled down this ramp, presumably to his death.
Mm-hmm. Off a cliff.
Somewhere. Done. Yes.
Yeah.
And then he challenges Black for the last man standing match on SmackDown next week.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this Kit Wilson character, several weeks in now, I think I feel comfortable in saying that it is certainly in the running for, worst gimmick of the year. One of them, you know. It's so bad that I can't even believe it's making air. And I just don't even think it's something that's good enough for NXT, you know?
Like, how many times does he text Aiden Prince every week?
Aiden Prince is probably not even answering his phone at this point. He's like, I don't want to come back to this. It's just like, it seems like such a half-baked, I don't know, attempt at some sort of social commentary. And it's receiving no reaction. And it's only making this Aleister Black, Damian Priest, cold feud like that much worse, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's one where it's like you can't even argue that it's like it's clever or witty. It's just, I don't know. I imagine 1 week this character is just not going to exist. It's just going to be forgotten. That's my thought. Solo Sikoa. Next, he introduces us to this individual named Tala Tonga. And there is a monster inside of this man. He needs Tala to bring it out, and your loyalty will be rewarded. And Tala pledges his love to Solo. And then Solo says that there is something missing for this family to be complete. And then, once he finds that missing piece, everyone is on notice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who's the missing piece? Is it Tama Tonga?
Haku,
yes, he must be.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Kit Wilson. Seriously, this team needs a Sami Zayn.
Maybe it's like, Elton Prince.
Elton Prince, yeah. You had said Aiden Prince in the chat.
Oh, did I say Aiden Prince?
Was quick to
Prince.
Correct us. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I'm not at all excited about this. The return of this team. The fact that we haven't seen them in a month, I actually think has improved SmackDown. You know, keep them in this room forever. Just have Solo, like, cut these promos introducing us to new members and just keep them out, because I don't think they've been that interesting. Like, I really do feel like their ultimate destination is as a comedic team, or at least a team with a bit more comedy attached to it. I think you're already seeing hints of it in Solo's characterization, the way he plays his character. You know, it's I feel like it's headed towards that direction, because there's as this generic team of like brooding, you know, like wet haired dudes with bad lighting. They feel so generic to me.
Kathy Kelly speaks with the Street Profits and B-Fab. They're getting a tag title shot next Friday, and they're on the same page. They explain that we're not just fighting for the titles. We're fighting for each other. And behind them, their television monitor is taken over by a virus, and the Wyatts appear. Rowan asks if they'll still be a family when everything comes crashing down. Your house is burning down, they state, which I would definitely want to clarify if they mean that literally, if they're pulling a
they don't do
here.
That on this channel.
No. And they shot they edited this to feature B-roll of the Street Profits at odds during their matches. So some wonderful editing here by Eric Rowan, and they laugh maniacally.
Yeah. So could we be getting the split next week?
Down under? Yeah. Perhaps.
Are you interested? Like, are you gripped by this tension?
At this point, sure.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I feel like this storyline to me has been missing like a big key moment rather than a series of really tiny moments. You know, like the way that they're trying to drive this tension between the Street Profits has been, I guess, through their losses and also just like
it was like Ford just putting his hand on Dawkins, like, I'll start the match. Like,
that
maybe,
sort of thing, yeah.
Maybe they could learn a thing or two from Samoa Joe on Wednesday, okay, to how to convey this. You're not going to get promo time. Just watch how you can convey anger through your emotions.
Or maybe they just needed, like, a bigger breakup moment. Like, you know, like, maybe, like, one of them cost the other, like, a big singles match. Or, like, maybe one of them lost the other's money on, like, a really stupid gambling bet. Or, like, maybe Dawkins made a move on Bianca and Ford. You know.
Maybe they team up with Bruce and Keith Hart at the Survivor Series, and Dawkins is the only one eliminated.
You joke, but, like, I mean, that was, I think, perfect for that sort of breakup. Like, that at least felt like a big moment that was memorable that we could call to and realize, okay, that's why they hate each other. Not a series of like very small, I don't think like very focused on moments that has kind of brought us up to this point. So every time they say like, we're good. We don't hate each other. I'm like, why do you hate each other again? You know?
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away, covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe. Next week for the show in Perth, the 8 a.m. start time, which they reminded us is 5 a.m. on the West Coast. Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy against the Street Profits for the tag belts. U.S. title.
So hold on a second, though. It's 8 p.m. on USA TV, not on Netflix.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes, you're right. It's just international that we'll get it at that time. U.S. title open challenge with Sami Zayn. Tiffany Stratton and Stephanie Vaquer against Julia and Kiana James, and Damian Priest against Aleister Black, last man standing match. So that sounds like a pretty full episode of SmackDown going into Crown Jewel the next day. Cody and Randy Orton against Bron Bron. So Breaker leaps off the apron. You knew Orton wasn't taking this one. He just sidesteps, dumps Breaker on the desk twice, and milked everything out of the crowd for that follow-up drop. Eventually, they get the heat on Orton. He would make the tag to Cody, who comes in, disaster kick to Breaker and a suicide dive. Reed takes over. They beat down on Cody for a long period, and then Randy gets the big pop as he is tagged. Power slam to Breaker, power slam to Reed, and then Reed comes back with the jagged edge and climbs for the tsunami, but Orton stops him with a superplex. Breaker comes off of the edge and drills Cody into the timekeeper's area, and Randy is looking in horror at what's happened as Cody is essentially taken out of the match, and he's left with Bronson Reed, hits the draping DDT and calls for the RKO when, you wouldn't believe it, there was a distraction, and Paul Heyman gets into the referee's face, and out of nowhere comes Seth Rollins to stomp Randy, leading to the tsunami and Bronson Reed pinning Randy Orton, prompting the question in Randy's head, where were you, Cody? So I really like this from the way they set this up in the opening promo. Like, I still think it's really impactful when you beat Randy, and Bronson getting like a big win here. They emphasize the win. And then on the floor, Rollins is left with Paul and declares he's mine as Cody crawls towards Randy in the ring. And Heyman warns Seth, don't do it. He's in your head. But Rollins can't give up that urge and runs into the ring to try and give Cody a stomp. But Cody is ready, avoids it, and he lays out Seth with the crossroads. I really like this ending for several reasons. Number one, I did like the planting the seed in the opening segment, and then the finish kind of puts that in motion of, is that how Randy felt afterwards? Then you have Paul that is trying to talk Seth out of this, which ties into Cody's words on Monday that who's calling the shots? Is it Seth or Paul? And Seth defies Paul's well-intentioned guidance, and he gets burned as a result of this, as Randy sees Cody come to life here and is able to fight off Seth, but you weren't able to save me. I just thought this was really well put together for a lot of different factors, for this, for the bigger thing with Paul and Seth, and with this Randy thing in the background. So I have to say, like, this whole kind of booking of this main event was my high point of the show.
Yeah. I thought everything post, you know, the just the hot tag, basically the final hot tag, was well worth watching. The rest of this was about as generic of a tag team match as I think you would expect out of, at this point, a Cody Rhodes with a Randy Orton. Not really much to the wrestling itself.
You got to watch him like selling during the commercial. Like, it's just like, there is nothing going on.
Nothing. But it works for this crowd because they are popular. And no matter how many times they just do the same template of tag team match, I mean, these audiences seem to eat it up. But if you want to watch it, certainly watch everything with the finish, which I thought was very well constructed. I mean, Paul Heyman He doesn't give spoilers, but he does give prophecies at this point, and they continue to come true. So very good way to continue to build to Rollins and Cody, while also, of course, continuing to build tensions between Orton and Cody, which, again, feels like it's probably the most they've really kind of hinted towards it in a long time. So I do think that this is one of those cases where they're concurrently building to Crown Jewel and Survivor Series at the same time.
Yeah. You need a really big match for Survivor Series, and I think Cody and Randy is of that level that you could, you know, pull the trigger for that. So, yeah, I would say I was very high on just the whole booking of your main event players on this particular show. Outside of that, like, I did enjoy the Sami Zayn Aleister Black match, and that was, you know, the lion's share of the matches were dedicated to those two, but contract signing was to me like a big nothing in the middle of this show. And I guess other than that, it was a bit of a, like, more of a focus on some of these NXT performers, like between Javon and then Sol Ruka and Zarya, that this show dedicated a lot of time to.
I was happy to see that. I thought Javon Evans came across really well on the show. I thought Zaruka came across pretty well on the show, and those were great follow-ups. Everything else I was pretty disappointed by. I think this continues to be, like, by far the weaker show of the two between Raw and SmackDown, and so much of that is because of
I think it should actually be an hour longer. I think that would be the key.
At an hour longer, you'd at least have a good tag team match, you know, in there as well. And the show is without that. Instead, we're getting, like, really bad writing for, like, storylines that I feel like are just so flat and not really going anywhere, like Aleister Black and Damian Priest.
Tell you, the Motor City Machine Guns, they're pining for that third hour probably.
They don't exist anymore. Yeah. Yeah. So I still continue to think the mid-card and the writing on SmackDown in general, outside of the main event, has been pretty poor. But your main guys are doing well. Like, they're both in the Cody versus Rollins, I think, very well.
Okay, well, we have a week to go until Crown Jewel, and that's going to be a very, very busy weekend with everything that's going on between WWE, TNA, and New Japan, NOAH. But this weekend, a little smoother when it comes to what is coming up this weekend. Still plenty that is going on.
Well, we, of course, have the long and winding Royal Road also coming out.
That's
tomorrow,
right.
Tomorrow afternoon at about noon o'clock, 12 o'clock Eastern time, we are going to have WH Park and Rich Fan talking about Kenta Kobashi versus Toshiaki Kawada. You might want to set aside 1 hour to watch this one, because they're going Broadway. They're going Broadway with the review. They're going to be talking about this very classic match. Long and winding Royal Road, number 49.
Wow. As my head goes towards, like, AI ideas. I mean, we were, Josh Nason was asking this on Pollock and Thurston this week about AI, how it can be incorporated into pro wrestling. The creator out there that can scrape enough Michael Cole data and place it over a Kobashi Kawada match, that's the channel. Brilliant. I would subscribe to.
Oh, God. Michael Cole calling Kenta Kobashi versus Toshi.
Oh, Kawada. My. It's the maneuver. It's the burning wrench.
An homage to the big dog.
Shades of the Nature Boy with those chops. I don't even know how you would do that, but it would be. I would definitely at least watch.
It would be
one.
Quite the edit job. It would be a lot of time invested for somebody. But
Cole and Booker.
Yeah. Every time Kobashi does one of those chops, Booker, like, has an orgasm.
Jesus Christ. Ha ha. All right, everybody. We're going to say goodbye to everyone on YouTube. But hey, hit the subscribe button and you always will get a Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown review here on the YouTube channel, waiting, staying up all night so that you get that each and every morning after.
We did. We also did not talk about it, but I do want to give a little bit of love to our latest edition of Rewind Away, exclusive to Cafe members, which is Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. I thought this was a really enjoyable conversation you and I had.
I had a great time doing this show. Like afterwards, it was one of those shows. I thought we had a great discussion. The three of us, Neil Flanagan was part of this show too. I would definitely recommend people checking this one out. And as Wei very accurately said on the show, this age is better today than when it came out in 2017, which is rare sometimes with these kind of, you know, time and place type of documentaries.
It's a documentary from Netflix from 2017 that really focuses on the sort of influence that wealthy people have on, free speech in American journalism. So if you're interested in that topic, and if you're interested in a lot of discussion about the Hulk Hogan Gawker trial, do take a listen to this Post Wrestling Cafe exclusive episode 191 of Rwanda Wei.
All right. Plenty coming up next week. So we look forward to all of that. We're going to say goodbye to YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.